podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 136 of the Unholy Trinity podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. We thought we'd jump in this morning after a few weeks off, after the end of a traumatic season. We always like to get a few episodes out over the course of the summer period. And delighted to say we've been joined by 90minute.com football media expert, journalist, whatever you want to call him. He knows it all, this fella. I don't want to build your Chris, but you know it all. And that's Chris Smith. But most importantly, Chris, you are an Evertonian, aren't you?
I am, for my sins, yeah, unfortunately.
But it's great to have you on the show this morning. We look forward to delving into, obviously, a lot of things that have gone on this week with Everton. One of them, obviously, you did cover with an article yourself yesterday about in regards to Richarlison, so we'll jump in with that shortly. But I'll come to you first. Like I say, it's been a busy week, hasn't it, with Everton. A lot's been going on. And probably the best place to start is the impending incoming of a new centre-half in James Tarkowski. What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, as you say, very busy week to start off what has to be a very busy summer for a club and a team that needs a lot of work doing after the absolute disaster that was last season. But Tarkowski, I think, is going to be the kind of business that Lampard's going to be forced into making. He's available on a free, and obviously air quotes over free, because he's still going to cost wages, but he's played a lot of games in the Premier League over the last few years. He's consistently fit, which we know that's been a problem with Yerry Mina, who you would say is our best centre-back, but that's no good if he's only going to play 12 to 13 games a season. Obviously, he does the no-nonsense side of defending really well, as any defender who's played under Sean Dyche for years should do. But he's also very good on the ball. Don't let his recent stats for Burnley fool you. During his time with Brentford, he was very much a progressive defender, and he remains so. And I think getting him in with Lampard and giving him a summer there, I think, to work on how Lampard wants to play, I think he could actually be a much better centre-back for this team than people give him credit for.
Yeah, I think with Tarkowski, like you say, I think a lot of people look at where he's coming from. Obviously, the style of play of Burnley is different and has been over the years to how we would expect Everton to play. So I think stats can quite often be a little bit deceptive in certain cases. But like you say, I think a really important part of bringing him in is the fact, I mean, I think he averages about 35 games a season for the last four or five seasons, which is massive. Like you mentioned there, you know, Yerry Mina, he struggled, once he gets to 13 appearances last season. He's not been graced in terms of his injury record since he came in. And as much as he's our best centre half, you've got to have players that you can rely upon to play week in, week out. And I think that's been a massive struggle. If you look at last season, him, Ben Godfrey had a couple of occasions when he was out with COVID, and then he was out, obviously, picked up an injury as well. So we haven't been able to nail down sort of two centre halves regularly playing. And that's been one of the really disappointing factors, I think, in the last few years, is that, you know, Jordan Pickford can't build and can't rely upon a centre-back pairing, because we've had so many injuries, especially to Yerry Mina. But Lee, what do you think about this thing incoming of James Tarkowski? Are you quite satisfied with that kind of business?
Yeah, I'd agree with Chris. I think it's the ponds we're fishing in, aren't we, at the minute? Purely because we're being forced to, because of FFP and the situation we find ourselves in. But we love a low block centre half from Burnley, don't we? But I mean, look, you know, jokes aside, I think it's a very shrewd signing. Yes, look, we'd much rather be going out for a young 23-year-old who's worth, you know, 20, 30 million with the potential to grow. But, you know, as I said, needs must at the minute. And I think, you know, I think he will be a direct replacement for Yerry. I see Yerry probably moving on this summer. You know, as much as I agree with you, Mike, he is our best centre-half. you know, if he's only available for what, a third of the season, if that, then, you know, we can't be relying on him, can we? You know, the stats say it all. When he plays, obviously he makes a massive difference in terms of our, you know, ability to defend, our clean sheet potential, everything else, our win rate, you know. So we do desperately need, when Yerry's not playing, a leader there at the back. And I think Tarkowski, you know, ticks all those boxes. You know, you look at his stats, he is actually a bit more progressive, like Chris said, than he's given credit for. You know, he is very commanding in the air. He's a goal threat in the other box. You know, and as I said, he's a natural leader as well. And we desperately need that at the back. You know, someone that can play the majority of the season and also just command that back four. I think Lampard identified him straight away, really. And I'm glad we've got him, because we weren't the only ones in for him. And there was a few people that would have been in for him, particularly on a free. But yeah, I think that's a shrewd sign in that. The only thing I worry about slightly is obviously his pace. He's not the quickest. But, you know, if he does play alongside someone like a Godfrey, for example, hopefully we can progress on now. He had a tough year last year. Then there's your pacing behind it in terms of anything that's in over the top. If we're trying to push teams a bit higher up the pitch, then, you know, that could be a decent combination. But overall, look, I'm happy with the business. As the first one through the door, I'm happy for that to come in.
I think Lampard was linked with him when he was Chelsea manager, if I'm not mistaken. I think there was links there that he actually fancied him then, that came out this week. So I think there's been a long-standing admiration there between manager and player. So I think it bodes well. You know, if the manager's looked at him prior to coming to the club, you know, when we were getting him in on a three, a player who's got great Premier League experience, who looks absolutely solid, then I think it does bode well. But Pete, I'll come to you. I know when it was first brought up that we were in for him, I know there was another few clubs, the likes of Aston Villa and Newcastle, were mentioned as well, weren't they, about trying to get his signature. You were really pleased, weren't you, with us being linked to him, and we're quite keen on him coming in.
Yeah, I think it's a great signing, and not just because it's a free transfer. You know, you're getting an experienced Premier League centre half, and as you say, Lampard did go after him when he was at Chelsea. I believe the transfer was blocked. I can never pronounce the name at Chelsea. So if someone else wants to have a go.
Oh, the one who's the go-between between Mourinho and the manager. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I do know what you mean.
Yeah, but look, whenever he's played against us, I've always been really impressed with him. You know, he's got great pedigree. If you look at his performance ratings, even when Burnley have lost, you know, he's in the 7 point, you know, whatever, which, you know, for a defender on the wrong end of a defeat, not to be sniffed at. I think he'll shore us up. I think if you look at his injury records, I think he's played 30-odd games for about the past 6 years, 7 years, something like that. So, you know what you're getting from him. You know, reliability, solid player. I've heard some people criticise his ball-playing skills, but I think that's quite unfair, really, when you look at the team he's been playing in and probably how he's been asked to play. I don't think you're going to be able to evaluate that until you see him in an Everton shirt and you see how Frank Lampard asks him to play. So, you know, hopefully he can surprise a couple of people. But, you know, he pops up with a goal or two as well. You know, he's really commanding in the air. He's really assured, experienced. You know, we've got a couple of young defenders in terms of, you know, Godfrey and Holgate and Branthwaite. And, you know, hopefully his experience can help them come along. And as well, I think what a lot of people are missing, he's played alongside Michael Keane. You know, which, again, it's just a no-brainer, isn't it? So I think we've got someone on a free that can hopefully just come and slot in and settle the defence, which, you know, is probably the area of our team that we need to sort out the most. When you look at how we lost some particular games last season, there were some glaring defensive howlers. And, again, like Mike alluded to, what that does to a team when, you know, you start letting in goals like that, and, you know, psychologically how you're able to manage a game, it's really, really difficult if you don't trust your defence. And yeah, we found a way toward the end of the season, but Michael Keane and Mason Holgate, I think, have really struggled to play together at times, you know, for whatever reason. Positionally, they've really got into some messes at times. So it's clear we need a different type of partnership. And it was so unstable throughout the season. I think the amount of centre half pairings or different back fours that we had to put out to get through the season is just not sustainable for a Premier League club. And it's very, very difficult to have any success whatsoever if you don't have that stability in your side.
Plus, it's a classic Pete signing, this, isn't it, Pete? You love a good centre half, don't you, Sam?
Do.
In the air, bang, get it out.
The name you were looking for at Chelsea is Marina Granovskaya.
That's the one. Good work.
As you know, I'm good with my languages, aren't I? That's just another example there for our listeners. But in terms of the centre halves, and obviously we mentioned there's been talk with potentially Marseille, I think we mentioned this week. Michael Keane is fancied by David Moyes at West Ham. So another one maybe that could be out the door. I can't really see us selling both. I think it's one or the other, to be honest. I think the most obvious choice is to sell Yerry Mina last year of his contract. You know, if you get sort of 10 to 15 million, we probably accept it. It's who takes a chance on Yerry Mina because of his injury record. That's the big thing. But I said it in the past.
Just out of interest, though, sorry to interject. Obviously, I do see Yerry going as well, by the way. I do agree. I do think he will go. If Moyes puts an offer in for Keane, and it's one that's difficult to turn down, what's everyone's thoughts? Would you be happy to see him go? Chris, what do you think, mate? Would you want him out, or?
I wouldn't say I want him out, but yeah. I'd be fine with him going. I think an important thing to remember, just touching back on Tarkowski in relation to the likes of Keane and Holgate, is pairing those players next to Yerry Mina last season. We saw how much they all played better once they were next to a leader. So to say that I'd just be happy to let Keane go, not really. But at the same time, if he does go, it's not a disaster. I know he is on a list of players that the club would be happy to let leave because they know they can get a fee for him. And obviously we all know how much Everton need money at the moment. So, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but I think you are right in that Yerry Mina makes a bit more sense because he's coming towards the end of his contract and he's perpetually injured. And we're not in a position where we can stockpile players to have one player ready for 13, 14, 15 games. So, yeah, it would make sense.
Yeah, we can't afford to carry anyone, definitely. You agree with that, mate? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like Chris says then, and I put it on Twitter yesterday, and we're going to come on to Richarlison in a minute, but, you know, sides know our financial situation. They know that we need to bring money in. So it puts us on the back foot straight away with any kind of negotiations. And, you know, Michael Keane would be no difference. I mean, West Ham, if they came in, say, with a £15 million offer, I think Everton would accept it, to be honest. I mean, it's got to be the right money. But Everton are in a position where we've got the luxury of, you know, really sort of bartering and haggling and things like that. You know, we're in a position where we have got to bring money in. So, yeah, I think if a half-decent offer comes in for Michael Keane, I think we'd let him go. I think that then, if that happens before Mina goes anywhere, you might then look to give Mina another 12 months on a lesser wage with quite a few terms and conditions in there, maybe based on appearances as well. Because I don't think you can afford to be giving them, what, 100, 120 grand a week for 13, 15 games a season. Everyone's got the price, haven't they? Let's be honest. There's not one player in that side, you know, as much as we love, say, Richarlison, for argument's sake. There's not one player on that side that hasn't got a price. And the club know that. And you know, like Chris said, the club have got a list of players there who are technically up for sale and they quite happily sell on. Keane will be one of those.
Just out of interest there quickly. So if, let's say Keane and Mina go, then we are left with Tarkowski, Godfrey, Branthwaite and Holgate. There's four there, isn't it?
So yeah, but four. Branthwaite will be loaned, won't he? There's a lot of talk around him getting loaned out. So I don't think Frank Lampard's seen Branthwaite as a four centre half, I don't think, for next season. I think he wants him to go away and get some experience or some more experience. I know he spent some time, didn't he, at Blackburn in the previous season, did okay. But I think he needs to go away and get regular game time. It's what we don't tend to do well. And that's where the link up, obviously, with Kevin Thelwell will come in. You've got to look to develop these players, and these younger players have got to go and get some regular game time and learn the trade, and not just be playing sort of 5 or 10 minutes here or there, or playing the odd cup game. It does them no favours, really. So as much as Branthwaite looks like he's got, you know, the attributes to be a decent centre half, he's big, strong, left footed, doesn't look to be too much of a slouch. You know, he needs to go and play football on a regular basis to really then nail down any kind of starting position at the club. So that's why I think maybe I can't see both Keane and Mina going, one or the other, for me. I still think Mina's ahead of that particular, the top of that particular list. But we'll see, you know, things can happen. There's a lot of things can change over the course of the next sort of 2 months or so. So we'll see where we are when we come to
What's the talk on Lewis Gibson? He went out on loan, didn't he?
He had a really, really injury-ravaged season, didn't he? He struggled. He didn't play, I don't think, a massive amount of games. And he was tipped to, you know, for the future, but he struggled. He struggled the last couple of years, Gibson. So I don't envisage him breaking through anytime soon. I think there's going to be a decision made on Gibson actually over the next few weeks.
I'm sure I read the other day, Mike, you're normally abreast of these more than me, but I'm sure I read that the club were looking into offering another contract. Have you heard that as well? Yeah.
Yeah, there was something come out the other day in regards that when they released a list of players who were being released and being kept on and things like that, he was mentioned in that particular category there, and you know, maybe getting a new deal. I just, you know, it's hard to assess these players when they do go on loan and they don't play a great deal through a variety of reasons. As I say, he's been injured. But I suppose we can't read too much into that, because Anthony Gordon went to Preston, didn't play a great deal, came back and was arguably our best player last season. So, you know, these things work in mysterious ways, I suppose. But I do think it'll be one of Keane or Mina. And like we said, Keane and Tarkowski worked together before. It could work in our favour as well. So he's probably the favourite to stay, I would say. But one player tipped to go yesterday more than ever is Richarlison. And it's come as no surprise to anyone, because we know that at least one of him and Dominic Calvert-Lewin would be moved on, because we need to bring money into the club. I think it's always a little bit, it's a bit sad, really, because it's, you know, Richarlison yet again. I think you said on the last podcast, after the Palace game, he's probably kept us up this season. Was it 10 goals, 6 assists? He's dragged us through a number of games. You know, sheer effort and will to win. He's a massive fan's favourite. You know, he plays for the badge week in, week out. But strong rumours yesterday from both Chris at 90minute.com, The Athletic were reporting as well. The link between Everton and Spurs. And I think the thing which obviously fans have latched onto really was how low the price was. I think 60 million euros, about 51 million pounds was quoted. Chris, what's the latest on this for those who haven't seen the reports? What's come out of both camps there?
Yeah, as you say, the Tottenham are preparing a bid next week. In true Daniel Levy fashion, he wants to lowball Everton. Like, he wants to lowball everyone, unless it's for their own players. But yeah, they're expected to make an opening offer next week, which I would very, very much expect Everton to reject, because it's going to be quite far below the asking price. But Arsenal, Chelsea, PSG, Atletico Madrid have all had confirmed interest as well. So it's going to be, as I said to you yesterday, Mike, it's going to be a bit of a saga, this one, I think. Speaking from a fan's point of view, just taking my job out of it for a moment, I would much prefer Everton to try and drag another club into it with Spurs and try and get a bidding war going to get as much as we can, because for various reasons. Richarlison's a player that we paid a lot of money for, of course, but also for all the reasons you just stated, he's a fan's favourite. I think it was 6 goals in his last 9 games of the season, which was absolutely crucial to keeping us up. I think it's rare in football when people say that he gets it, or like he understands the club and he understands the fans. That's usually a bit of a reach for fans looking for someone to be their hero. But I think with Richarlison, he genuinely does. He does all the little things that fans want your favourite players to do, like gives a bit of stick to the other side and sort of always has time for the fans. And to let a player like that go, I mean, even speaking from a PR point of view at Everton, like, they need to bring in a lot of money for him. So that would be the best outcome, would be to drag another club into a bidding war. But yeah, that's me speaking as a fan for that bit. How likely that is, I don't know.
You mentioned there, obviously, Chelsea, Arsenal, PSG. Did they see Atletico Madrid were mentioned in the article, Chris?
I did, yes.
So that's an interesting take. I mean, I don't think anyone would begrudge Richarlison a move to a Champions League club. I think I said to you, didn't I, yesterday, it's a lot more palatable if he goes abroad, because seeing Richarlison playing for another Premier League side, I think, will break a lot of people's hearts, to be honest. And I think that's the real sticking point with Evertonians is that we've always expected him to move on at some point, but we always expected that it would be a move to a club outside of England. And when people start talking about Spurs, you know, it was only a few years ago that we were competing with Spurs for a position in the Premier League table. So it shows how far, not even so much how far they've risen, how far we've fallen, really, to, you know, for one of our better players, or one of our best players, to be looking at potentially moving to Spurs, because they can offer, obviously, Champions League football. And that's the most heartbreaking side of things, really, for me. Lee, what are your thoughts on the Richarlison situation? We knew it was going to crop up. We knew it was likely he was going to go over him, and Dom was probably going to be him. But what are your thoughts on these Spurs links, especially?
Yeah, like I said in the last podcast, I mean, look, you know, he was instrumental in keeping us up. I mean, Chris is just giving you the stats there. I mean, not only that, his work rate, his ability to play through pain. You know, you saw him in that last game. He was injured after about 20 minutes. You know what I mean? He was hobbling around the pitch, but clearly he wanted to stay on. Clearly Lampard wanted to keep him on because he knows there's a chance to get a goal. And look, he pops up with a crucial goal to equalise. So, but, you know, Richarlison's one of those players, if he plays for you, he's easy to love, isn't he? You know what I mean? Because he gives absolutely everything on the pitch. You know, he's obviously technically very good. He's Brazilian. He's their current number nine. You know, his goal scoring record for Everton is 1-3 since he's been here. In 150 games, he's got, I think, 53 goals or something like that. 1-3 for a team that, let's be honest, has on the whole been pretty garbage in that time. And I think we should, if it is Spurs coming in for the rumours, around about 60 million or even 60 million euros, I'd say, you know, add another 20% to that at least. Because, you know, we paid 50 million for him at Watford when we signed him. The market's gone up since then. You know, inflation, as we know, outside of football is ridiculous anyway, by the way. So for me, personally, I'd be looking to nearer to the 70 million mark, 70 million pounds, that is, not euros as well. I know that sounds ridiculous. When you see the likes of Harry Maguire, though, and people of that sort of ilk going for 80, then, you know, we need to be pushing these clubs. Maybe you're right, Chris. Maybe we need an Atletico or someone like that to come in just to sort of force Daniel Levy's hand. We know what Daniel Levy's like. He's a shrewd operator. He's been in the game long enough. But, you know, we just need to slap that sort of price on him, 70 mil or whatever it is, and say, look, that's it. Bid that, or see you later. He's staying with us. And then forces, and if they go elsewhere, they go elsewhere. But, you know, one thing I was potentially interested in is, obviously, we've been heavily linked with Winks. I mean, all of, you know, we've spoken privately. I'm not sure I'm completely convinced by that signing. Obviously, Lampard seems to like him. He is a ball retainer in midfield, but I think we just need more athletes in there, to be honest, who can get about the pitch. Not neat and tidy, tippy-tappy players, but it'd be interesting to see if those links are genuine. whether potentially that maybe has make weight as part of the deal for Richarlison. And also possibly they might even throw the Dele, you know, right off in there as well. Obviously, we got Dele essentially on a free initially, but if we did sell him, obviously we'd have to give something back to Spurs. Otherwise, they've got nothing to gain. So there is obviously some sort of deal in there for Dele if we did shift him on. So, you know, they could potentially hold us to that as well. If he does go to Atletico, I would be interested in Cunha, who signed for them last season but not really played. He's a real talented Brazilian kid, a bit younger than Richarlison. But we've also been linked with Emmanuel Dennis from Watford. And again, in a really, let's be honest, a crap team last year. He looked really good for Watford in patches last year. Again, a young kid who seems to have a lot of talent, can play through the middle, can play off the left. And obviously wouldn't be nowhere near as much as obviously what Richarlison would be. So, yeah, that's an interesting... I don't know what you think, Pete. I know you've mentioned Dennis in the past, but but you also like that as Ismaila Sarr as well, don't you? So what do you think, mate?
About what?
About sort of if Richarlison did go, there's been links with the likes of Emmanuel Dennis, who obviously scored quite a few goals for Watford last season, also Sarr as well.
I think the problem is that there'd be huge gambles. I mean, I do like Sarr, but I don't think either of them are anywhere near the calibre of Richarlison. So essentially, we'd be losing, I suppose, our best player and replacing him with, you know, what one or maybe two signs that, you know, are certainly not guaranteed to reach anywhere near his level.
The rumours are you'd be paying around about, what, 15, 20 mil for one of those. Well, certainly Dennis would be about 15, wouldn't he? 15, 20. So, I mean, it's a third of the price, isn't it?
I mean, I'd be heartbroken to see him in a Spurs shirt. I've got to be honest. And it is quite sickening as a fan to think, you know, look, they had Mourinho, we had Ancelotti, we went there and played them off the park and just looked like a, you know, supreme footballing outfit. And then both of us have fell from grace. When Conte took over, you know, we were in a very similar position to them. You know, at the point in time they played us, I think it was only Conte's, what, first or second game in charge or something like that when we played that 0-0. And they've just... you know, risen and risen. And we all know what our story's been. So I'd love to see him go elsewhere. And like Chris said, I think the best thing for us would be to try and get a little bit of a bidding war on the go. But clubs know the position we're in and, of course, are going to set out to exploit it. And why wouldn't they?
I know you said, Mike, just quickly about, you know, you'd be gutted if you went to Spurs. And yeah, we were on par with them, obviously, a few years back that now. But I just think if you look at Spurs now, though, I mean, they've got an elite level manager. I think Conte's possibly even in the same bracket as Klopp, Guardiola, potentially, maybe just behind. They've got two of the best, you know, certainly one of the best strikers in the world. Son's been outstanding as well. It'd be interesting where he gets in that team across the three, though, because Son likes to play off the left. And obviously, although he was playing through the middle a little bit last year as well, they've obviously they brought in Kovalevsky, didn't they, from Juve? He was outstanding when he came in. He looks a real talented footballer. He plays obviously more off the right, though. It'd be interesting to see because he doesn't just walk straight into that front three. For me, as good as he is, and obviously, you know, I hate to say it, but he's a Conte type player. Richarlison, in that he plays with passion, he plays with 100%. Conte was like, he's like that as a manager, was like that as a player himself. So it'd be interesting to see, if he does end up going to Spurs, how he forces his way into that front three.
Yeah, it's interesting one there, isn't it? Like you say, they have got an abundance of talent. I mean, you've still got the likes of Lucas Moura floating around and players like that who can still offer quite a bit to that side, whether it's off the bench or from the start. But obviously, with having Champions League football, there's a lot of football to be played for that Spurs side next season. So plenty of opportunities if he did go there for him to play. I mean, you know, he wants Champions League football, that's for sure. I just don't know. I mean, if you get Richarlison, you know, Spurs haven't won a trophy, you know, for many years as well. You know, they're not as if they're prolific in terms of winning trophies. So if he's looking for sort of instant success. I don't think he gets it at Spurs, to be honest. I mean, we know what Conte does. His shelf life at clubs is about sort of two seasons, maybe a little bit longer. So I don't think he's going to be there for the longer term, maybe medium term. And, you know, Spurs, are they going to press the reset button again if they're not getting, you know, success and they're not winning trophies? I don't know. So it's a strange one, Spurs. I understand why there would be interest. I understand, in a sense, the attraction to Richarlison. But I always had in my head, you know, I'd see him at sort of Real Madrid, maybe PSG, sides who are built for instant success as opposed to a side where you're certainly not guaranteed it. And Spurs falls into that category for me. But, you know, like Chris has said, you know, it's going to be a bit of a saga. For us, we need to get this boxed off pretty early. If we want to be doing business and replacing Richarlison, you know, with whoever it might be, we need to get this boxed off, get the money in and go from there. We're already saving, you know, quite a few quid on the fact that we've already said we're going to be releasing, obviously, Fabian Delph. Sigurdsson, Kenny's on his way. Obviously, Cenk Tosun already confirmed to be going. So that's a lot of money. And obviously, El Ghazi played about two or three times, or maybe two or three appearances. Donny van der Beek, they've gone back. So like £400,000 a week there straight away. That is being saved. So we need to really now, you know, as soon as we can. If he's going to be moved on, and the interest is there. Hopefully a couple of clubs, two or three clubs are interested. Bidding war goes on. We get a few more quid than what we were expecting and get it done as early as we can. It's no good at going on and on and on till, you know, the back end of the transfer window. It doesn't help us in any way, shape or form. But it's going to be a long...
Mike, just quickly, what's your thoughts on Dennis? I was just looking at his stats then. He's got 10 goals and 6 assists as well in 33 games for Watford. He's 24. And Watford are arguably worse than we were last season, and that's saying something. But he sort of, for me, if we're looking at someone in not quite, the, I know Pete's right, he's nowhere near in the same class as Richarlison. You know, if we're forced to look at someone maybe at a third of the cost, if not less, then, you know, that might be an option. We might be able to get him a bit cheaper than probably his market value and the fact they've been relegated as well, isn't it?
I don't think it's it'd be a bad sign, and I think it's, you know, in the kind of mould that you'd be looking for. He did well in a poor Watford side, you know, who never really threatened to stay in the Premier League. I think you'd be looking at, like you said earlier on, 15 to 20 million pounds would be what they're probably looking for. I think they got him for, I think, according to transfer market, 3.6 million. So it's quite a jump up for them to be looking for 15 to 20 million. But he can certainly do his job. You know, we can play either side of the front man. He can play up front as well, essentially. So it certainly wouldn't be a bad signing. But I think, you know, he's a similar age to Richarlison, less pedigree than Richarlison, but doesn't mean that he can't develop and can't progress and, you know, can't make us, you know, into an all-round better side as long as we buy other players as well, because we can't go into the new season in a worse position. We've got to come out the transfer window, if we sell Richarlison or not, as an all-round better side. You know, I know there was a lot of factors as to why we were where we were last season, which we've discussed at length, but we've got to go into the season a more competitive side. And for me, yeah, you know, he's got the attributes to be a success. He's proven he can score goals in the Premier League. He always looked a threat to me. He's got pace. You know, pace is always one of those things that can really help you in the Premier League because it's so quick. So, yeah, definitely he's probably going to be one of the names mentioned. Like I say, long, long summer ahead of us. Let's just hope we can get things boxed off as quickly as we can.
I'm just hoping quickly, before you finish on that, I just hope we sign... No, it'd be gutted to see him go, obviously, but I hope we sign 3 or 4 decent players for that sort of transfer fee, do you know what I mean, to improve us, rather than go out and sign, you know, a 40 and 50 million pound player, and obviously, you know, it's more of a gamble, but, you know, if it is the likes of Dennis or Saar or people like that, and then maybe, you know, a midfielder, a centre-half or whatever, then, you know, it'd be an easier pill to swallow, wouldn't it, if we did improve the squad with the sale of one player.
Yeah, I think we've got to stop at the moment looking at players around sort of 35, 40, 50 million pound and making those kind of purchases. There's got to be, you know, common sense approach, or the approach which means, you know, you buy someone for 15 million, you can sell them for, say, 25, 30 and make a profit. We said that for ages. That's got to be our model now. It can't be lashing silly money at players because it doesn't work. It hasn't worked for us. It may do in the future if, obviously, you know, we get better financially and we get better at doing that side of things. But, yeah, it's got to be players around that particular price tag. But we're going to be fishing in the sort of the free transfer, the loan market as well. But I expect maybe one or two cash transfers, if you like, to come into the club as well. But let's see, long summer ahead, that's for sure. But we'll wrap up the transfer side of things there. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to have a quick chat about a letter that was released by our majority shareholder this week, Farhad Moshiri, after the short break. Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. And like I mentioned then, our majority shareholder came out this week after calls from fans. It's got to be said, you know, the fans have mentioned communication or lack of quite often over the last season or two. They've also questioned the communication since the end of the season, because at the end of the day, we've just come out of a Premier League season where we were very close to being relegated. We all think we shouldn't have been anywhere near those positions. And then this week, Farhad Moshiri sent us all a letter, which I basically feel was an apology for what has gone on, saying that we've got to learn lessons from the season, thanking the fans for obviously the role that we all played in keeping the side in the Premier League. But Peter, what are you taking from that? Because people are still being fairly critical about it. People feel it's just sort of maybe giving lip service to fans, really. Did you take anything from what Farhad Moshiri said?
Do you know what I did? And I'd probably say out of all of us on the podcast, I'm normally considered the most cynical and miserable. So I may be a bit surprised by my reaction to his letter of apology, but it didn't feel to me just like a PR exercise. You know, I thought it was important that he came out and apologized to the fans, you know, and was open and giving some kind of account of what, you know, what exactly has happened this season. And I'm sure behind closed doors that analysis will be happening in a much more greater level of scrutiny. But it was the right thing to do, and it was what was necessary. And I think, you know, fans can't call for communication from the club and then, you know, criticise the club for communicating with them. You know, he's come out, he's made a clear apology. He said it wasn't good enough, that lessons have been learned, that new things have been put in place. And for me, that's the difference between, you know, lip service and actually doing something. You know, the club do seem to be trying to learn lessons, and it's clear that with the reorganisation of the club, you know, particularly in terms of Moshiri coming in and his sort of controlling stake, if you will, that there's arguably been too many powerful people in the club with strong opinions on certain decisions that should be made. And at times that's led to messes and chaos, and it can't happen again. And we need a unified strategy again, and we need to stop, you know, completely sort of reinventing the wheel. I mean, I think it's become a bit of a joke, hasn't it? I think Paddy Power developed some kind of Everton meme about how we continually try to reinvent ourselves. So I think Kevin Thirlwall coming in, hopefully now we can allow him to do his job, and Moshiri et al. Can step back a little bit and maybe listen and, you know, allow the model, allow the approach to be trialed and see if it works, and you know, adjust and listen rather than make hair trigger decisions. But to me, it does feel like more than a PR exercise, because it's clear at a structural level within the club things are changing. And I guess I'd say to fans, you know, look, let's give them another chance and let's get behind them for next season.
Yeah, do you feel the same, Chris? In terms of, have you got hope that this is the majority shareholder potentially stepping back? and realising that maybe he shouldn't be having his fingers in all these different pies. And when he employs people at the club, he employs them to do a job and trust them to do a job. Because he does mention in his letter about, obviously, Frank Lampard and Kevin Fellbell coming in, and also as well, the coach educator, Kevin Nicholson's come in as well. There's quite a few changes there, Chris. So do you think, does that give you hope that he is learning this lesson?
Yeah, I think I'm really happy with it in the context of him bringing in Kevin Fellbell. Obviously, my main area of expertise is MLS. It's what I cover for a living more often than not. So I've seen his New York Red Bulls teams up close and personal and the way he operates. And we know, we were mentioning before, the kind of ponds we're going to have to be fishing in, and Fellwell's an expert in doing that. He can work on a budget, he can sign young players and develop them and sell them at a profit. So he's already made a positive change for how the club needs to be run now. So with that in mind, I am quite happy with it. I understand people's reservations when, for example, I saw a couple of comments that people were annoyed that it was an open letter and not a video. And people were saying maybe they were hiding behind a ghostwriter or something like that. And I was a bit like, I understand where you're coming from and you want the most transparency possible from your club. But at the same time, we wanted communication. He's give it. And the letter seemed genuine to me. My favourite part of it was him not taking ownership for what the fans did at the end of last season. I think a lot of people were a bit irritated by Bill Kenwright coming out after the Leicester game and saying we did this and we did that, when in reality we know that's not the case. It was only the fans pulling together. And Lampard said it enough times, the players have said it enough times, how much of a difference that made. So Mascheri not taking ownership of that, I think, probably knew what he was doing when he was avoiding that with his wording, but smart move, and I think the right move. He's put the right people, I feel, in place to bring the club forward from the position they're currently in, and I think now is the time. He does have to step back and allow Fellwell to work with Lampard and let them to, and as you say, Kevin Nicholson and all the people he's put in place, let them run the football inside. He's just there to answer with money. That's it. I look across the park, and I mean, I'll throw this one back at you, but how many times do you take the Super League debacle out of it? How many times do you see the ownership at Liverpool coming out really publicly and speaking to Jim White or going on record to give their opinions? As far as I'm aware, they just don't do it because that's not their job.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. I think that side of things, if we weren't where we were, and even if we were sort of floating around mid-table, but we were safe, we were secure, I don't think this would have been called for. I think we much rather hear from the likes of Kevin Fellbell, who we did as of, was it yesterday? Yeah, there was a meeting, online meeting with interview with Tim Howard, and I think he comes across very, very well. And that's the kind of thing we should be listening to and want to hear, than always looking for something from the, you know, Farhad Mascheri. But I understand why fans wanted it. I do get that, the fact that, you know, we're looking for answers, for apologies, and for people to hold their hands up and say, listen, I got it wrong. And Farhad Mascheri has said that in his letter. And, you know, like you say, you know, other clubs don't really operate that way, where their owners or majority shareholders come out and, you know, they feel the need to speak to the fans on a regular basis. You know, we didn't like it when he was going to Jim White. I mean, that used to drive me absolutely crackers, that he was going to someone on TalkSport and relaying information. And some people might like that sort of open and honest approach. And I didn't, you know, if you're going to communicate, you communicate through the right channels, which is via the club website, via emails to the fans, whatever it might be. And that's the thing where I think Farhad Mascheri has hopefully learned his lesson from, because he's not really been getting in touch with Jim White over recent months, that's for sure. But I think it was enough really from him. I think it was nice to get it read it. Nice touch as well with a mention to offering the friendly to Dynamo Kiev, which will probably be the friendly at Goodison Park before the season actually starts, so the week before, probably our last game of pre-season, if that's agreed, and that's a nice touch as well. But I think it was important in this sense to hear from him. But I think we need to, like you said, Chris, you know, other clubs don't always have their owners or majority shareholders coming out and saying, you know, messaging the fans and communicating on that particular level. Other people should be doing that. And as I say, I'd much rather listen to Kevin Feldwell, Frank Lampard, people like that, Kevin Nicholson, you know, let's see what they've got to say. And, you know, which actually links to their role. But I'm going to bring Lee in. I'm not even sure if Lee's there because he's gone off on his camera in regards to this. Lee, what are your thoughts on the letters from Farhad Moshiri? Are you happy with it? Is it something that you want to see going forward? Yeah, I think we've lost them, so we'll scrap that question. But no, it was just, as I say, I thought it was important to have a chat about it because there was still a section of supporters who weren't too pleased with what is actually what came out, and they were quite sceptical about it. But for me, absolutely fine, no issues. Some, you know, held his hands up, whether you want to believe it or not, he apologised. But the proof will be now going forward. Have lessons been learned? If they have, we'll see that over the course of the summer in terms of transfers that are being made and people being allowed to do their job. From what I've heard from, you know, in and around the club, Kevin Feldwell has been allowed to get on with his job, and, you know, with Frank Lampard, and that's the important thing. But like I say, the proof will be when the season kicks off, transfer window is over, and we see where we are with those players. But we'll wrap up that particular chat there. We're going to take one final break before we have a quick discussion over the our new shirt sponsor, Steak.com. We're back after about 30 seconds. Welcome back to the final part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And it's all change, as we knew it would be on the front of the shirts for next season. People were crying out for the announcements. There was a rumour about what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was going to be the online betting company, Stake.com, who were Watford sponsor last season. We were told by The Athletic, any new deal will be record-breaking, as they always are. How much record it breaks the record set by Cazoo, we don't know as of yet. We know it's more than £10 million a year. But Pete, I'm going to have to come to you first, because you were quite vocal to us about this in terms of the club getting stake on the front of the shirt. And you're not best pleased, are you?
No, I've got a couple of thoughts about it, really. I think, firstly, it feels a bit tone deaf. And secondly, it just feels odd. We were just talking a moment ago about the club trying to learn lessons at an organisational, you know, leadership level about mixed messages and having a unified vision. Now, Denise Barrett-Baxendale came out and criticised our previous betting sponsor, Sports Payser, while they were the sponsor, saying that we don't really want them on the shirt, and that Everton Football Club shouldn't have a gambling organisation as the sponsor. And then we've gone out and got another one. And as a fan, I mean, it's incredibly frustrating for a couple of reasons. One, not to take us back to the club apology, but you can understand how can fans have confidence in that when the club are coming out and making a massive contradiction. You know, again, at a huge organizational board leadership level with the club sponsor, you know, and it is really important. You know, who's slapped on the front of that shirt is really, really important. And that decision won't have been taken lightly. You know, that would have been long term negotiations, with several parties, and a number of people will have had to have approved this decision. So it seems very, very strange. And yet it might be record-breaking in terms of the amount of money involved, but for a Premier League football club, You know, what's £1 to £2 million for a club the size of Everton? So I don't really understand it. I think it's strange. I don't think it's befitting of the club. And I think, like Chris said, you know, when we've been so outspoken on, you know, things like the Super League, you know, when the club have got it so right when it comes to things like, you know, what's going on in Ukraine at the moment. And Everton Football Club often do get it so right when it comes to, you know, I think modelling who we are to the rest of the league and to society. It just seems like a very un-Everton thing to do to me.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one. I mean, you say about what does difference does £1 or £2 million make? I think in our predicament, it makes quite a bit of difference after what's happened with USM and pulling out sort of £20 million worth of sponsorship. I think that's quite a big hole to try and fill. Now I'm not sitting here, by the way, saying, "Oh, I wanted the gambling company." You know, after what Denise Barrett-Baxendale said, and that's why I think there's so much criticism out there, is because you go back a couple of years ago, and she was so keen in cutting ties with Sports Pacer. You know, that her words have come back to haunt her, because she's backtracked now, and she's got another gambling firm on the front of the shirt. And I think that for me, I'm not as concerned as others, I've got to be honest. I think, you know, every football club, every ground you go into has got betting stations within the stands. Every ground you go into has got adverts of betting companies around the hoardings. You've got the Premier League heavily backed by Sky, and obviously Skybet adverts are on, Bet365 adverts are on, you know, at half time, in breaks between, you know, when matches are on the telly. I mean, in the Championship, they sponsor the league, for God's sake, you know. So I think it's hypocritical for people to come out within the sort of media, because Everton got a lot of heat for this. When you've got another 9 or 10 clubs with betting companies on the front of the shirt, I think that takes the mick a little bit. To be perfectly honest, it's not an ideal world. I think that's probably one of the lines a club would probably spin. You know, the landscape since even January, February time, when obviously the war in Ukraine started, that's changed a lot of things as well. So it's certainly not a perfect world to negotiate in. And Everton have thought, well, we've lost, you know, so many millions of pounds from USM, we've got to try and fill a hole. If that's the best that we can get, we're going to have to go with it, because it's not illegal to have them on. You know, that's the thing. And people look at it from a moral standpoint, and I get that, you know, but that's only based really for me on what the club said 2 years ago. If Sports Pacer, if that contract finished and we brought in Cazoo and Everton, you know, just went on the record to thank Sports Pacer, and that was that, and we didn't sort of say we don't want this kind of deal, this kind of company on the shirt, we wouldn't have got this kind of heat, in my opinion. I think maybe the disappointing factor for kids is that they can't have the sponsor on the shirt, and, you know, all kids want to look like the heroes, don't they? And that's probably one of the negatives of it as well. But, you know, I'm not quite in the camp of, you know, people who have gone down the moral route. As much as I understand it, listen, I'm not criticising people, we've all got our own opinions. I have some understanding why the club have gone down that particular route from a financial point of view. And as I say, I think those who criticise it within the world of football media, etc., I think it's quite hypocritical, if I'm being honest, because football is heavily backed by betting companies, whether they're on the shirt or not. As I say, we see adverts all the time around the ground. They've got betting stations around the ground. You know, it's along the similar lines of selling beer in the grounds and advertising those kind of companies as well. So it's a funny one, really. It's caused a lot of criticism. But Chris, where do you sit with this? Are you like Pete, where, you know, from a moral standpoint, you don't think it's right, and the club, you know, should have really either stuck with Cazoo for that third year, or found another front-of-shirt sponsor with slightly less money coming in?
If I'm honest, I'm still wrestling with it myself. A number of years back, I had a bit of a brush with gambling way too much and putting myself into a bit of a hole with it. And I can speak from experience that that urge to go out and blow all your money does, it, sometimes it can come as easily as just seeing a name of a bookie or a gambling site. So I'm, suppose in that respect, I don't like it. And I agree with, and I agree with the point that it is a bit hypocritical of the club to sort of make a big song and dance about one gambling company, and then a couple of years later, they're now putting it back on the shirt. On the other hand, it is a harsh reminder that football is now first and foremost a business. And if Stake were the company or the potential sponsor offering the most money, I can kind of think from a business level that the club are probably sat there thinking, what are we supposed to do? We need money. Why? How are we going to turn this down? I mean, I saw a suggestion in the week for the kids' shirts and putting Everton the community on the front of it. I don't understand why they've never done that before, to be honest. But I mean, that would be at least a nice little nod from the club to say, we know this isn't ideal. Here's a gesture to show that we're not trying to make it right. I'm not really sure how to word it, but at least we're acknowledging that this isn't ideal, but it's a decision we've had to make. All of that to say is, yeah, I'm still wrestling with it from a moral standpoint. I don't think it's ideal, but I also understand the business side of it. And there are people at that club who have got to put the finances first, and that's clearly what they've done.
Yeah, and I think obviously from your viewpoint there, obviously you said there about how gambling can take hold. Now, I was never been a big gambler. I went through a time when I was a little bit younger, where I put a few bets on, and I was one of those people who, okay, I could step away, but I could still feel at times. There were still times when I felt I need to chase one of, you know, I was only putting on a couple of quid here and there, but I need to get that money back. And didn't, you know, I can see how it can. Of course, I can see how it can take hold, but I just think from a point of view of people who've come out and criticised it. You know, they're not looking at what the source of the league is built on. Like you say, football's a business, and all these companies feeding in some way, shape, or form to sport, to football. And I think, you know, and they've got to, if we're going to go down that road, I think then you need to, which would never happen because it's too lucrative for the business. They need to just say, well, no one has. As gambling comes on front of the shirt, there's no advertising in football grounds, there's no betting stations in the grounds. You know, if people want to go online and bet and do that, then that's the personal choice. But I think they've got it can't be sort of one rule for Everton, for example, and then one rule for somebody else. I think they've got to make a decision on it, to be honest with you. And that's why I think that the criticism that the club got, I understood it. From the hypocrisy side of things, that you said this 2 years ago, but now you're saying, oh yeah, we're going to backtrack because it's getting us, you know, say £500,000 more potentially than what Kazoo are going to give us per year. I get that side of things, but then I think we've got a lot more heat than a lot of other clubs you've had them on this year for a number of years. And as I say, the league and football and sport is based around, you know, these gambling companies, and they advertise freely on a match day. And there's no concern around that. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's got to be, you've got to look to, if it's a huge concern, which I agree for some people it is, then make a decision on it. I know this white paper's coming out where initially it was thought that from, I think, 2023-24, they were going to say that there's a wholesale ban. You can't have gambling things on the front of your shirt. Now, the talk is now it's going to be a softer approach that they don't want you to have it. But that will have to be a personal choice from the club. You've got to personally say, well, we are not going to use it. And that's where, so again, it makes no difference really, unless someone makes a decision and says, you can't have it. Clubs will do it, whether we feel, unfortunately, it's morally right or wrong. But I think, like you say, I think with the kids, you know, Everton in the community on the front of the shirt, we've said it for years, you know, when we had the likes of Sports Pacer, to lesser extent, Chiang as well. Why aren't we giving kids the option to have something like that on the shirt? just so they feel a little bit more involved and a little bit more like the heroes that they watch. And some shirts look better without a sponsor on, to be honest. And I think a lot of people are taking the stance, even adults are saying, well, can I have a shirt next season without the sponsor on? You know, because like you said, Chris, from your viewpoint and Pete's and others, they're not too happy with what's on the front of the shirt.
I think you raised a good point though, in that I should have mentioned it before when I was saying like that urge can come to you just from seeing the name of a betting company. Mm-hmm. But when we're putting that in context with Everton, I can confidently say that Everton having stake or not having stake on the shirt, like, is that going to make a world of difference in that you can sit down and watch a Sky Sports broadcast now and Sky Bet will be thrown at you every advert. If you're watching a championship game, they will literally say Sky Bet 100 times in the broadcast, and then they'll go to an advert and it'll be sponsored by Bet365. And sometimes you'll even get a third betting company coming in halfway through the advert break. So I'm not justifying what Everton are doing. What I'm saying is I'm essentially agreeing with you in that they've had a lot of harsh criticism in the context of how much gambling plays a part in football. It seems like everyone's attacked Everton. Maybe it's because of the hypocrisy, but everyone has attacked Everton quite viciously over this when it's everywhere. Some of the fans that have come out and attacked Everton for it support clubs in a league that is sponsored by Sky Bet and have a betting company on the front of their own shirts. So, yeah, Everton, as always, seem to have bore a particularly harsh brunt. But I think if we take it in a bit of context in that the entire game is washed with it, how much difference does it make? Again, I think I'm just making it clear that I'm still wrestling with what I truly feel on it myself.
And that's fine. And that's obviously where everyone has got a different opinion on these kind of things. And that's absolutely fine. And I just think that they need to, as I say, totally come in with a ban and say, right, it can't be on. You know, we can't have it on shirts, sleeve sponsors, you can't have it around the ground. But I just don't think they're ever going to do that in terms of, especially the advertising side, because they get so much money from it. And Sky control the Premier League. Let's get that right. You know, so from their perspective, they're making a hell of a lot of money off people from Sky Bet. And I just can't see it. And as I say, I'm not sitting here delighted with the sponsor. You know, it certainly wouldn't be my first choice to go down that particular route. I think of Everton, you know, what they said a couple of years ago, you've got to stick by your convictions. But I understand, you know, with what has gone on since, especially in the recent past, why they've sort of just gone, well, we're going to have to sort of bite the bullets and backtrack and take the best offer that we can get as well from a business perspective, rightly or wrongly. But it's a really tough one. You know, it is a tough one for people to sort of stomach. And as I say, there's a variety of opinions on this podcast as well. But we've just got, you know, I think another thing about it as well, I don't think it looks particularly great. I've mocked up a couple of, you know, three or four different shirts and put them out. And my point with it is, if you make the font, especially what we saw on Watford's shirt last season, it was absolutely massive across the front of the shirt. If you make it smaller, it looks all right. And I put a few shirts out, did a home away, two ways and a third, and I think it looked all right, to be honest. But I don't think it's a particularly attractive logo either. Which again, you know, when you're looking at sales of shirts and things like that, that doesn't help things. So I think the club will lose out, as much as merchandise isn't a huge income booster in the grand scheme of things. I think the club will find they won't break any kind of records next season for shirt sales. That's another thing as well, because of a lot of kids won't want to have the shirt without the sponsor on. A lot of adults don't want to buy the shirt, Pete included, with the sponsor on. I think what they probably would be wise to do is, for the training stuff, get a training shirt sponsored like a lot of shirts do, so people can maybe go out and buy those kind of things, because that will certainly boost those kind of sales. Obviously, you know, that remains to be seen. A lot of commercial deals to be done including the sleeve sponsor as well. But yeah, it's certainly a sort of moral conundrum. Definitely see both sides of the argument. But I mean, it could be on the share for the next 3 years if reports are to be believed. But hopefully, you know, we get into a better financial position. We have a similar thing to what we have with Kazoo, where after 2 years you have that option of and we can readdress it in a couple of years' time. But we'll see. Let's see what happens. But that's all for this week, Chris. Really enjoyed the conversation this morning. Great to have you on. Obviously, your insights, especially with obviously the Charles and stuff, Tarkowski stuff, and we look forward to hearing more from you over the summer with hopefully some good positive Everton news.
Thank you very much. Yeah, a pleasure. Happy to finally be on, and yeah, let's hope that I'm announcing the signing of Neymar and Richarlison managed to stay and get him to come over to Goodison. But I don't, you know, don't hold your breath on that one. But yeah, let's hope for a good summer.
No, really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing what happens over the course of the summer. But that's us for this week. We'll be back over the course of summer, like we say. We get a few outs, especially as the transfers start to kick off and pre-season starts, the players get back in. So we'll catch you in a few weeks' time.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.